Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down, but when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/pod.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here on episode 27 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are presented by Underdog Fantasy, and I am your host, Joe Orico. You can check me out over on Twitter, at JoeOrico99. That's where I share out all of my new work, these podcasts, articles that I write, notes that go out directly onto Twitter. You can check all of that out at JoeOrico99. Today, we are going to be going through Thursday's slate, talking about the things that stood out to me. We are then going to be talking about the most added and dropped players of the day. Before we get into some weekend pitching streamers, I've highlighted five guys that I really like between today and Sunday. Mostly matchup based here, but there's a lot of guys that are pretty low rostered, especially we're looking at Yahoo roster rates, and I think there are going to be some pretty good streams this weekend. So we'll get into that later on in the show. I want to remind you guys, if you haven't checked it out already, take a look at my Patreon. There's a link in the description of the episode. Daily content coming out over there, my extended quick hit notes, daily starting pitcher charts, there's updated rankings, there's also daily Q&A. If you're interested in supporting my work and seeing more fantasy baseball content, do check out that link within the description of the episode. But let's get into it. Let's start breaking down Thursday's slate. This one feels pretty good. If you guys have followed me the last few weeks, you probably know where I'm going to start with this one. Taj Bradley. I've been on the Taj Bradley buy low train for a while now. We've seen a couple of really brilliant starts in a row, and yesterday was one of the best starts I've seen in his career, albeit a fairly short sample size, but I think this was probably Taj Bradley at his absolute best, or pretty close to it. 7 shutout innings with 11 strikeouts. He allowed 3 hits and walked 2 batters, 30% CSW, and a 16.3% swinging strike rate. I really don't understand the public's hesitation on Taj Bradley. I don't get why he's still available in so many places. He's only 41% rostered in Yahoo leagues. It doesn't make a lick of sense to me. The ERA still being a little bit inflated is probably what's doing that. I just don't understand why we wait too long. Like a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people wait way too long. And then you see like a Garrett Crochet, who we're going to talk about in a minute, is a great example. People didn't really want to pick him up. There was a couple of poor starts earlier in the, he started very well. And then a couple of poor starts sent the ERA up, and then people dropped him all over the place. It's the same kind of thing we're seeing with Taj Bradley. People dropping because of one or two bad starts, and then taking way too long to get those roster rates back up to where they should be. Garrett Crochet at this point is 90% rostered, which even that's a little bit too low, but you'll take it at this point. 90% is a hell of a lot better than 41% for Taj Bradley. I don't think there's a huge difference here talent-wise. I think you could make an argument that Bradley is better than Garrett Crochet. It's very close, and I've been a huge, huge Garrett Crochet fan. That's not shade by any stretch. But Taj Bradley is pretty damn brilliant. I know the home runs have been a problem for him, but what we've seen so far this year outside of these last two starts was an unsustainable amount of home runs being given up. More than 2 homer per 9, 20-plus percent homer to fly ball rate. It was never going to stick to that extent. Will he give up probably a couple more homers than you'd like? Yeah, I think that's probably still a problem. But the talent, the stuff, the strikeout rates, the decent enough team context, there's a lot really going for him. The team context is maybe not as great as it has been or could be, but it's not terrible. Tampa's like a 500 team. It's not like it is the White Sox or the Marlins or the Athletics. It could be a lot worse in that department. So there's really nothing here that tells me Taj Bradley should still be available in as many leagues as he is. The walk rate is solid. The strikeout rate is 31.6%. It's among the elites in baseball. Please, please, please pick up Taj Bradley. He is due for a start against Minnesota his next time out. This is coming on Wednesday, and I would expect more of the same. It's a Minnesota team that does not really scare you offensively. They're kind of sometimes a little bit scary, but generally speaking, they're middle-of-the-pack team. I would expect Taj Bradley to have another Taj Bradley type of start there and do well against the Twins. 41% is outrageously low. I have no idea why he's still available in so many leagues. But let's move on and talk about Garry Crochet, because he might have actually been better than Taj Bradley yesterday. This was his Mona Lisa for the season. 13 strikeouts to this point. Who knows if it can get better at some point, but right now, this might be the start of the season for anybody. 13 strikeouts, 2 hits, and 1 earned run over 7 innings for Garry Crochet. A 41% CSW, 23.5% swinging strike rate, 24 whiffs from Garry Crochet yesterday. Even against the Mariners, a team that strikes out a stupid amount, that is a crazy, crazy number. He leads the American League in strikeouts by a pretty wide margin at this point. So he is in first with 116. The next best is 98 for Cole Ragans. There are still shutdown concerns. There are still White Sox team concerns here. There are still some problems, you know, if you're looking at the long-term outlook a little bit, at least as far as 2024 is concerned. But I think as of right now, it would be hard to pick somebody else in the Cy Young ballot. I think he's right up there. Like, I've been a huge Jack Flaherty fan. I think he's also right in that conversation. Tarik Skubal, Luis Gil, Corbin Burns, you got to put him in there as well, probably Tanner Houck. But considering Crochet is doing what he's doing for this miserable team, leading the league in strikeouts with a winning record while pitching, he has 6 wins. The White Sox as a whole have 18. I don't know where they'd be without him, but I think he's got to be at least in the conversation for Cy Young at this point. Ronaldo Lopez is the next guy we're going to go over. Dominant stuff against the Orioles. 6 innings pitched, 2 hits, 8 strikeouts, and 1 walk. Did not allow a run. 32% CSW, 19.8% swinging strike rate. As great as he's been, I don't think this is really sustainable for Ronaldo Lopez. There's a few reasons. And I got a couple of comments that people were saying, like, how come you're more bullish on Garry Crochet than you are on Ronaldo Lopez? I'm not necessarily. Like, a lot of people said, why are you pointing out Garry Crochet's great start and not really pointing it out in the same matter for Ronaldo Lopez? And it's a point. Like, it's not something that's crazy, because they're both going to have innings restrictions. And I've mentioned it for both of them. Really, there was nothing like malicious intended here. When I tweeted it, I was just blown away by Garry Crochet. I have a lot of shares, so I was kind of excited. And I said, I think he's in the Cy Young conversation. As of right now, Ronaldo Lopez is in the National League Cy Young conversation. I was just a little bit more bearish on his outlook for the rest of the season. But there's no real shade to be thrown here. Ronaldo Lopez has been brilliant. He has I was looking at Garry Crochet. Garry Crochet has a 3.16 ERA. Ronaldo Lopez, I mean, he has a 1.69 ERA, 70 strikeouts in 69 and a third innings. He has been fantastic. I think there are a couple of differences here, though. Garry Crochet is actually underperforming his numbers, if you're looking at ERA estimators, with his 3.16 ERA. 2.35 xERA, 2.41 xFIP. His Sierra is 2.37. With Ronaldo Lopez, he has the 1.7 ERA, 1.69, but the xFIP is 2 runs higher at 3.58. Same with the xERA, 3.58. The Sierra is sitting at 3.64. He also doesn't have the same kind of elite strikeouts as Garry Crochet, and his walk rate is actually quite a bit higher as well. So there are differences here. I think they're both kind of shutdown candidates, and I do have a fun guest in mind to bring on to talk about some starting pitchers who might get shut down. I'm still figuring that one out, but I do want to do that as a specific show, because there are so many starting pitchers that we have these concerns about. I have them for Lopez. I have them for Crochet. If there's any discrepancy there in my mind, Lopez is somebody that we might see get shut down as the Braves are inching towards the postseason. And I say that because the innings are already, at this point for Ronaldo Lopez, the most he's thrown in a season since 2019. There's a good chance that once we get into July, August, maybe early September, the Braves have been dog shit for quite a while now, and they're still 6 games above 500. A hard time believing that once they start to figure things out, they're not going to make the postseason and be in a very good position over the last few weeks of the year. So I do think that Ronaldo Lopez is a risk of shutdown, a risk of the Braves maybe not necessarily shutting him down, but limiting his innings a bit to preserve him for October. And I also worry about his arm withstanding this kind of innings. And the same thing with Crochet and a lot of these guys. Once you're going from a very small amount of innings and building that up by like 100 or so, roughly, then that's something that can be kind of dangerous. Ronaldo Lopez has thrown 184 innings in a season, but if we go 5 years between that where he's throwing 57, 65, 66, and then he goes back up to 160, 170, in this current environment, it does kind of worry me. Maybe it shouldn't worry me this year more than any other year because it is a general concern. But I think the performance of Lopez and Crochet shouldn't really make us stop thinking about the innings limits. If anything, you celebrate what they're doing, and both of them are kind of sell highs. Even Crochet, as much as I love him, the reason I'm a little more interested in Crochet is because I think there's a decent enough chance where he gets traded. And I also think that even if he doesn't get traded, the White Sox are a pretty stupid organization. The Braves are a very smart organization. The White Sox might just be like, all right, let's see what we got with Garrett Crochet. I could totally see it happening, and they just let him go a little more. That's one option. And they let him go 150, 160 innings, and we don't have to worry about really getting him shut down or something like that. There's another alternative option here where Garrett Crochet might get traded. I've heard a lot of talks over the last couple of weeks. We've talked about it on this show. We've seen it on Twitter and everywhere else that Crochet might be traded in a package with Luis Robert, which is just whoever's getting that is getting a really, really nice deal for themselves. They're probably paying a pretty penny for it. But let's say that Garrett Crochet gets traded to, there was talk of the Padres a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was last week, talk of the Padres. The Padres acquire Garrett Crochet. It's because their pitching has been dealt some losses with Musgrove, with Darvish. I mean, they're not going to acquire him and shut him down. That would be kind of crazy. I would expect if you're acquiring a starting pitcher for the stretch run, you're acquiring him to use him. Same thing with the Dodgers, but to a lesser extent, because I think the Dodgers might actually do more of something along the lines of what the Braves are doing. The Dodgers are just they're just playing around, pretty much. Like, they're pushing pitchers back. It's the lineup that's really struggled, but their pitching is absolutely ridiculous. If they did acquire Crochet, I could see it as, like, a Luis Robert, Garrett Crochet type of thing, which would be, it would make the team, like, literally just unbeatable, probably. But at that point, Garrett Crochet doesn't even really need to throw many innings for you down the stretch. You want to keep him sharp-ish, but you're acquiring him for the postseason, where a team like the Padres would be acquiring him to get to the postseason as well as for what he's going to do in October. So I think there are different situations depending on what ends up happening with Garrett Crochet. If he sticks in Chicago, we probably see some limitations. If he gets dealt to a team making a playoff push, it's hard to see that team acquiring him, paying a king's ransom right now. You're not acquiring Crochet, especially if you're getting Lou Bob or somebody else in that deal, for less than a huge haul right now. You're going to deal out a massive group of prospects or even, you know, regular rotation players, whatever it is, just to shut the guy down. I don't think that's going to be likely. So a trade might actually be the best thing for Garrett Crochet's fantasy value, certainly in terms of run support and win potential. That would help him out. With Raylo, the Braves are not going to trade him. The Braves are going to keep him. Obviously, there's no chance they trade him after what we've seen and what they got him for in the offseason. I think there's a better chance we see Lopez limited more by his team down the stretch based on their situation. So if there is any undertone of, like, you like Crochet more than Lopez, one, I think Crochet is better than Lopez. And I also think there are fewer potential restrictions down the road for him, as much as I think they're probably both going to be limited to some extent.
Want to teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod.
Let's talk about Lance Lynn. Man, it's really gotten bad for Lance Lynn at this point. There's really nothing there. I was kind of interested this year as, like, a late option for strikeout, somebody that wasn't going to cost you a lot. And, I mean, last year, 191 strikeouts. He won 13 games. You're thinking, okay, maybe he's able to find something in St. Louis, his old team, where he did have success as a young man, won a World Series, et cetera, et cetera. But the strikeouts are just kind of gone. Like, the thing that you were hoping for are really, they've been going for a while, but at this point we're talking about a 22% strikeout rate. He's also walking nearly 10% of batters. We're seeing a walk rate that is higher than we've seen from him in about 6 years. It was 6.7, 7.3, 7%, 3.7. Last year, it jumped up to 8.3, and then this year, another jump up to 9.7%. That 12.3 strikeout minus walk is the worst, again, since 2018. And 2018 was not a terribly great year for him. He had a 4.77 ERA, and it was kind of bad. This is kind of the same Lance Lynn that we saw that year. Not very effective. He's not really stranding base runners anymore. Like, a lot of the time we'll see a left on base rate that's kind of low, and you think, all right, it's going to regress back to the normal. But he has been like 68, 67, 65% each of the last 3 years. I think part of that is just the deteriorating of his arm and the quality of his pitches. He's not able to strand guys as much because he's not as good anymore. I mean, Lance Lynn is 37 years old. It's not crazy to say that, yeah, there's just not a lot left here. Yesterday against the Pirates, pretty mediocre stuff. 4 1/3, 4 hits, 3 earned runs, 5 strikeouts, and 3 walks. 27% CSW, 14.6% swinging strike rate. If you play in a really deep league, I don't mind holding on to him because there's not a hell of a lot of options in really, really deep formats. But I haven't been 115-team league, and I haven't started him in a long time. There's been no reason to. I think that, honestly, just thinking about it, he's got to be cut this weekend. He's not even able to go 5 innings most. Like, the last 3 starts, each of them has not even been able to make it 5 innings. You're not getting strikeouts. You're not getting volume. You're not getting a lot of win potential in St. Louis because that team is really not as good as we were kind of hoping they would have a bounce back or whatever. They're below 500. Their offense is not good. They're just one game below 500, but they're not a great team, generally speaking. There's nothing you can really point to and say, he gives you this. There's nothing. There's literally nothing you're getting out of Lance Lynn at this point. He somehow has a 3.75 ERA, and I don't know how the ERA estimators aren't even worse than they are. They're not terrible. 4.23 Sierra, 4.13 xFIP, 4.15 xERA. I would think that they'd actually be worse. They should be worse. In any event, I don't care what the estimators tell you. Lance Lynn is not good anymore. He's not somebody that you can trust in a fantasy context outside of very, very deep leagues. And I'm still seeing him on a lot of Yahoo rosters, 24%. He was at 28% yesterday, so people are starting to cut bait. But for the 24% of you, if you're still holding Lance Lynn, it better be a really deep league. And I don't think there are that many. There are people who play deep leagues on Yahoo. This is mostly 10 and 12 teamers. And I get questions about the pitchers that are available, like Mackenzie Gore sitting out there, Brandon Pfaadt sitting out there, Chris Sanchez. There's a guy, Taj Bradley. I mean, there's tons of guys that have a lot of value that are sitting out there, and people are rostering guys like Lance Lynn, and I think a lot of it is just, I know that he's been good in the past, and I see that name in my lineup, and I keep him there. I just was going through weekend lineups, and I realized there was one league where I still had Cedric Mullins in the lineup. It's a 15-team league, but I benched him. I put him on the bench because he's just been friggin' terrible for a while, but it's one of those cases where you see the name, and it doesn't immediately jump out at you to like, oh, I got to bench this guy. I got to cut this guy. Because in your head, they've been good assets for a few years. But I looked at Mullins, and I've talked about him on the show recently. But when you have 14 teams that you're managing, things can kind of get lost in the shuffle there. And Mullins is batting .184. He hasn't hit a home run over the last month plus. Like, he's not great anymore. I mean, I'm not cutting him, but he's not somebody that's worthy of a starting job, and I think that's kind of the same thing with Lance Lynn. You've just seen his name, and you're like, all right, Lance Lynn, he's fine. And you don't really think much past that, and that's completely understandable. We all kind of do that with certain players and certain teams, but at this point, there's not really any need to hold Lance Lynn outside of really, really deep leagues. 10 and 12-team managers, I think you can pretty happily send Lance Lynn back to the waiver wire. But let's talk about Byron Buxton. He's been heating up a little bit, and I've gotten a couple questions, and before you ask, the answer is a resounding no. I can't do it. I just don't think there's really much here anymore. With Byron Buxton, he's hitting .230. I mean, I'm actually sorry, it went up last night because he had a couple hits, so he's up to .244. That's not terrible, I guess. If he was still doing the other Byron Buxton-like things that we've seen throughout his career, you'd be able to live with that. But we've seen a massive reduction in his quality of contact, like a stupid reduction. He's been a guy, his barrel rates have been 13, 17, 18, 16, 15%, going back every year to the pandemic, like since the pandemic started. This year he's at 6.9%. heart hit rates in that same time frame, 48%, 53, 50, 45. Now we're down to 42. The power is gone, essentially. 50 games and four home runs. He's been able to stay relatively healthy. I know he's missed a bit of time, but through 50 games of Byron Buxton, like, this was kind of the thing with him the last couple of years. Of, even if you know, and we do kind of know, that you're not getting a full season, you're still getting, like, 20 home runs over half a year. Last year was 17 homers in 85 games. The year before, it was 28 homers in 92 games. The year before that, 19 homers in 61 games. You're always getting something. He was one of those guys where it's like, okay, you factor in the replacement value, and while Buxton's healthy, he's worth slotting into your lineup. He's not that guy anymore. The strikeout rates have gone up to a hilariously bad number, 30% strikeout rate at this point. Early in his career, he was kind of that guy. Seemed like he figured it out. 2019, 2020, 2021, those rates were reduced. We started to see him walk more in the last couple of years. But we're looking at a 29% strikeout rate with a below 5% walk rate at this point. He is very, very average, if not below average at this point. The power, maybe it comes back. Now that he's hit 30 years old, though, with all the injuries he's had, I wouldn't bank on it. I wouldn't say that it's like a certainty that you're going to see another Byron Buxton great season at this rate. If I had to bet, I'd say that Byron Buxton is probably essentially done as a fantasy asset, and it's going to be one of the big kind of what-ifs. We saw this guy in the one full year he's ever played in 2017, hit 16 homers, steal 29 bases. He hit 253, whatever. The batting average was never really a strong suit for him. But we saw several real flashes of this guy could be an MVP type of caliber player. 2021 was incredible for him. Even 2022, while he's out there, 92 games, 28 homers in 92 games. Like, this guy had some stupid power, and it's just completely gone. So I've been getting some questions. He's been added in some leagues. If you're looking at today, there's about 1,700 Byron Buxton ads at the time of recording. I can't do it. I just don't think there is going to be much need outside of really, really deep formats where you roster a shitload of players to the point where, like, everybody's rostered. You're talking standard 12-teamer where you're rostering three outfielders. I can't do it. If you got, you know, expand that to a five-outfielder league and a 12-teamer, maybe he's worth a bench spot, but I put him on the bench this weekend when setting my weekend lineups in the 15-team league, the one league where I have him. It's a draft and hold. I just don't think there's really a hell of a lot here at this point that we need to be holding out for. There's no speed. There's no power. The team around him is not that great. I think you should do yourself a favor and cut Buxton and really never think about adding him again. Let's talk a little bit about Wyatt Langford, who has been turning a corner a little bit recently after he really, really struggled to start his career off. Since he's returned, it's been 48 at-bats, 13 hits, which is a .271 batting average. He scored four runs, driven in eight, and he stole three bases in that time frame, including two of them yesterday against the Dodgers. Overall, with rookies this season, it has been a bit of a tough road. Jackson Holliday, Langford, Churio, these guys as a whole have not performed the way we probably thought they were going to. And I think a big reason that we had our expectations so high is because we were a little bit spoiled these last couple of seasons. Bobby Witt, first rounder, not as a rookie, he was first rounder, but he was like the 50th, the 55th ranked player as a rookie. Julio, same type of deal. Corbin Carroll, I really thought that Langford was going to be this year's version of Corbin Carroll. I started to tell myself that more and more as March went on, thinking, this is going to be a guy who's going to be drafted in like the 60 through 80, 90 range, depending on your league and size and format. Somewhere at the back part of the top 100, who is going to end up bringing first or second round fantasy value. Corbin Carroll last year, he went up as draft season went on, but he was a fourth, fifth, sixth round pick for a lot of it. And I thought that Langford would follow that same trajectory. It has not worked out that way. And it's just a good reminder of how hard the big leagues are and about also how great Julio, Bobby Witt, and Carroll are. I know Carroll has really struggled this year. I think it's more due to injury than anything, but it goes to show how great those guys are for hitting the ground running the way they did. Baseball is very hard. Hitting a baseball is probably the hardest thing to do in professional sports, and we kind of lose sight of that. Wyatt Langford, I think, is going to be fine. The lack of power has been beyond puzzling. 164 at-bats, 180 plate appearances total. And he's not yet left the yard. He has one home run. It was an inside-the-park home run. Other than that, we're looking at zilch. But if you just look below the surface a little bit here, he's not striking out at a very high rate, 21%. His walk rate is about 8%. Those are numbers that are normal for a proper 30-year-old veteran big leaguer, if you're looking at those type of numbers. He's not being overmatched, is what I'm trying to say. The walk and strikeout rates are right in line with league average. The speed is immense. 98th percentile sprint speed. The stolen bases, there might be a bit of a disconnect there because the Rangers just don't steal a lot. If you're looking at their team stolen base leaders, it's Leody Taveras and Travis Jankowski, 5 and 6. And, you know, Adelis Garcia has 5. Marcus Semien has just 2. These guys don't steal a lot of bases. They don't send a lot of base runners. And maybe they just don't have the green light or whatever. Langford should have the green light more and more. And maybe the 2 stolen bases yesterday is a sign that we are going to see more and more stolen bases from him in the second half. I would very much like for that to be the case. And I think one way or the other, we are going to see him, as he is more comfortable as a big leaguer, start to improve a little bit. Maybe he'll be more comfortable stealing bases and he'll have more of a green light. The power will come. I don't think anybody expects Wyatt Langford to end the year with 1 home run. It would be wild if that's the case. But I think we're probably going to see 10, 12 second half homers at least. You know, you're going to see him steal more bases. Like, I think 15 homers and 15 stolen bases is probably about what we're going to see from Langford. The batting average is .238 right now. It probably comes up a little bit since he's come back. Like I mentioned, he's up over .270. Still not lighting the world on fire, but we've seen an improvement to the point where I'd say if he's out there, you should be probably picking him up. 71% on Yahoo. He was a guy who was like 95% plus for most of the season. Most of the season. It's only like 45% of the way through. But he was a guy who was on a lot of rosters. People started to give up, and that's the point where you can kind of buy in. And maybe second half Wyatt Langford is like a top 100 player. It would not surprise me. It was a little bit expensive to pay those late March prices, but if you're finding him on waiver wires and you're avoiding the rough stretch, you're picking him up now, none of what he's done so far is going to affect you. I think that that's a pretty wise move if he is still just a free agent in your league. Let's talk about Justin Henry Molloy. He hit another home run yesterday, his second since being recalled about a week ago. I like him, but definitely more so in those deeper formats, especially ones that factor in on-base percentage. Massive walk rates all throughout the minor leagues. We've even seen it so far through his first 9 games in the bigs. He's walked 5 times. The OBP is going to be strong. The walk rate's going to be strong. If you look at the various projections, ATC, zips, the bat, all of them call for about a 10 to 13% walk rate with around a 330, 340 on base percentage. So that's going to be a strong suit. But I think there are going to be places where he is lacking. You're not going to get a lot of speed if you get really anything. The homers are going to be probably not terrible, but not great, especially in that ballpark. Comerica does not let you play up power. The teammates around him are not terribly great. And if you're talking standard 5x5, most of you guys are playing batting average and not on base percentage, I think. Then we're talking about a .220 to .230, .235 type of batting average. Not a guy that's going to be a huge asset in standard leagues at this point. I think that the future is pretty bright for him. 2023 in AAA, he hit .277 with 23 homers. Like, there is some potential for him, but I don't think it's going to come to fruition really this season. I think it's more so a dynasty play slash if you are in those deeper on base percentage type of format. Standard leagues, I think it's a little bit tough to get him in your lineups right now. Let's talk about Michael Busch. I feel like he's another one of those guys. I mentioned Mullins earlier, and this is a shout out to my good friend Ryan Bloomfield. Last year, he coined it the Gene Segura situation or something along the line. It was named after Gene Segura, the guy that you have in your lineup for a while that's not really doing anything, but you kind of just don't realize it either because you have too many teams or because the name brand is still solid. That was kind of Gene Segura last year. I've said that that can be, you know, Cedric Mullins this year in a sense. And I also think Michael Busch kind of qualifies, especially after how he started the year. Michael Busch, through the first couple of weeks of the season, people were saying like, oh my God, the Dodgers, those moronic Dodgers, they got rid of this guy. He's a superstar. He's going to hit 30 home runs and blah, blah, blah. It's like, maybe the Dodgers have an idea of what they're doing. And we like to criticize different teams when we don't agree with the moves. I do it myself all the time. But he was very hot for the first couple weeks of the season, and since then, he's been pretty terrible. Michael Busch, all throughout May, hit 2 home runs with a .208 batting average, has not yet hit a home run in June. That was the whole appeal here, that you're getting some cheap power from Michael Busch. We haven't seen that at all. In fact, three runs batted in over the last month. Really, all of that production, and this is the thing, if you're looking at Yahoo's rankings, 277 for the season is actually not bad. You could argue that that's viable in a lot of leagues. You're generally talking about 23-person rosters on 12-team leagues. That's 276 players rostered. 277th player for the season. A lot of people will see that and say, okay, Michael Busch has been fine, and that's after he's been shitting the bed for a month. If you're talking about over the last few weeks, that rank has gone progressively down, but everybody's looking at Michael Busch as like, okay, he's still been fine, eight homers, whatever. It all came in the first couple weeks of the season, and since then he's done not a thing for you. Over the last 2 weeks, not a single run or RBI, and of course you're not getting speed here with Michael Busch. You're getting essentially nothing. You're getting a guy in a lineup that is not really been that great so far, and we've talked a lot this week about the Cubs and how they've struggled and disappointed. You're not getting a lot of counting stats. You're not getting a lot of power for Michael Busch. No batting average, no speed. The multi-position eligibility is very nice. First and third is a very valuable little position set there for fantasy and for real life, whatever. But I just can't do it at this point anymore. There's just nothing he's providing. There's nothing that he's providing for you right now. And I think even in deeper leagues, you can make the argument that Michael Busch is a fairly easy cut unless there's really nothing out there. But there's got to be somebody doing better than one home run, no stolen bases. Like over the last month, you're looking at a .255 batting average, which is actually a little bit of an improvement for him technically if you're looking at the last 30 days. But there's nothing. It's coming with nothing, and I just don't think we can even expect the batting average to really hold up at that rate. He's got a .364 BABIP. Projected rest of the way for about a .235 batting average. So I think that we've seen the best of him this year. Probably he might go on another hot streak or two and have a week where he hits a couple home runs and make you regret dropping him. But 31% on Yahoo for a guy that's doing nothing is really egregiously high at this point. I think you got to be cutting him. You got to be cutting him at this point. Even in 15 teamers, I'm trying to think of a reason to hold on. I can't really think of anything at this point. Let's move into the ads. I am going to skip over a couple of them that will be included in our starting pitcher streamers for the weekend. So the number one ad is somebody that we are going to talk about. The number two ad of the day, David Hamilton. We've talked about him a bunch this week. He is the 18th ranked player over the last month, number nine for the last 2 weeks. And for the season, he's really creeping up there as well, .268. Overall for the season in only 130 at-bats, he's been fantastic. Dual eligibility, playing every single day. And he's back to the top of the order again for the Red Sox. Not the top, but he's batting second. Three of the last four games. If you're seeing David Hamilton out there, he is the number one priority ad on the waiver wire, below 50% rostered. There's nobody. I mean, I guess Taj Bradley as well. They're both. I mean, that's close. I think Hamilton probably takes a little bit of precedence there, but those are the two guys that are absolute must-roster players. David Hamilton and Taj Bradley. Matt Waldron is also being added up quite a bit. He faces the Mets tonight. He is a very, very solid streamer. He's been excellent for a while now. Seems to really have figured things out. It's hard to fully trust a guy who throws a knuckleball, but he doesn't throw it all the time. He's not a typical knuckleballer that's like 80, 90 plus percent knuckleballs. It's like 35% knuckleballs on a given night. So if that pitch is not working, you can argue, okay, he doesn't have to go to the knuckleball. There's not as much volatility. He's been really good for the season as a whole and especially as of late. And he gets to face the Mets. And the Mets, I'm not really scared of the Mets. Are you scared of the Mets? Because for me, it's like, I'll stream most guys against them, and especially when they've been doing well like Waldron has. So I have no problem picking him up and starting him here. He's not one of the top priorities, I wouldn't say, but I think he's a very solid start tonight. Tyler Soderstrom has been added up in quite a few leagues. He's been very solid lately. Don't think I'd really want to be trusting this, especially in one catcher leagues. I don't think there's a hell of a lot there. I'm seeing people dropping Sean Murphy and Connor Wong sometimes. I think that Soderstrom is just kind of a bit of a hot streak. Again, we're talking about a guy who plays for a miserable team in a miserable home park. I just can't see this being that valuable in the long run. If you want to pick him up and ride out the hot streak, not going to hold it against you, but I don't think there's a hell of a lot here with Tyler Soderstrom. I think he's a short-term guy and deep league player at absolute best here. Hunter Brown is also among the most popular ads. I've been a Hunter Brown fan for a very long time. I held him pretty much everywhere where I drafted him and just benched him and hoped that things would get better. And they absolutely have. Over the last month, he's a top 100 player. 29 innings, 31 strikeouts with a 3.10 ERA and a 0.97 whip. The season-long numbers are still absolutely horrendous. But if you're picking him up now, none of that affects you. You're just getting what we're seeing going forward from Hunter Brown. And I do think he could be a top 40 or so starting pitcher easily. And he gets the Tigers tonight. Really a good opportunity for him to do well. Definitely be taking a look at Hunter Brown as one of the better streamers for tonight. Carlos Correa is also being added quite a bit. Wrote him up yesterday in a long, long write-up on Patreon that you guys can check out in the description of the episode. He's up to 299, 31 ribbies, 6 homers, 30 runs scored. It looks kind of like vintage Carlos Correa again, more like we saw in those early to mid years in Houston as opposed to what we've seen so far in Minnesota. If he's available, I would add him. I don't know fully if this is going to keep up, and you're not getting much speed, not a hell of a lot of power, but you're getting counting stats galore with a great batting average, and I think Correa is worth a roster spot pretty much everywhere at this point. Jackson Merrill, we've talked about him a little bit recently. He's been very good. A couple home runs the other day. They had Thursday off, so no games yesterday, but he is still being added up a lot. He's a top 150 player, shortstop, outfield eligible, giving you 5 category production. Jackson Merrill should be on a lot more rosters than he is. 56% is selling him quite a bit short, I think. And Jaime Candelario is still being added up, as he should be. Another guy who hit 2 home runs and then had the day off, but somebody we've also talked about as well. First and third base eligibility. There's a lot of stuff to really like about what he's doing. Buxton, among the most popular ads. I get it. I understand why it's happening. He had 3 hits yesterday, and he has hits in 3 straight games. I get it. I just can't do it myself. Andy Paez is starting to get added up more and more again. He was a tricky drop when he started to struggle a little bit just because we saw what he could do in that Dodger lineup. Shallow leagues didn't have much of a choice but to cut him there when he went cold. But at this point, I think he's worth picking back up again. And he's still out there in a lot of cases, 24% on Yahoo. He's batting in the middle of the Dodger lineup. He actually batted 5th yesterday and hit a home run. I wonder if they'll keep him batting in that 5-6 kind of range. That would be very sweet for his value. But he's been pretty solid, even as a 6-7-8 type of guy in the order. So I think Paez is a pretty solid addition to you there. Even if you are talking about shallower leagues, I think he can probably make it work there. And the last one we'll mention is Tyler O'Neill. Man, he destroyed a pitch that Aaron Nola threw yesterday. Just tattooed it. He's been so good when he's been healthy this year. The health has been in question, but 164 at bats. We got 33 runs, 12 homers, 22 ribbies, and he's batting 256. Tyler O'Neill is only 73% rostered. If you're seeing him available literally anywhere, he gets the must roster player label. Without a doubt, he should be rostered in every single format. So go get Tyler O'Neill if you're still seeing him out there. The most popular drops, Luis Severino. I wrote him up yesterday as well on Patreon. It's not something I expect to go well as the season progresses for him. He's got a 3.12 ERA and a 1.18 whip, and he's only 54% rostered on Yahoo. I think people kind of see what's going to happen here. Strikeouts are not great. People had kind of talked themselves into this is old Severino again. He's going to do what he did for the Yankees for us. Early Severino for the Yankees, like 2019 Severino. ERA-wise, you could argue he's done that, but it's just not something I would really expect to continue with him. If you look below the surface, the numbers are pretty terrible. I did write him up in a lot of detail yesterday. So do check that one out. But Severino, I think, is a pretty safe drop in those shallow formats. Lance Lynn, the number 2 most drop player. I love to see it. This should have happened a long time ago. Get him the hell out of here. He should not be on your roster. Cole Irvin is an interesting drop. 3 earned runs in 5 2/3 against the Braves with 8 strikeouts. Not bad at all. It just wasn't really his night in terms of, you know, he allowed 4 runs, 3 of them were earned. It could have gone better for him considering the stuff that he had. It was the Braves just finally seemed to figure it out a little bit, not fully. They're still kind of in a bit of a downturn here. But it was a better night for them. They scored 6 runs all told. You know, it was a bit of an improvement from them, and it was kind of unfortunate timing that Cole Irvin had a pretty solid start when the Braves were, you know, had a bit of a better night. You got 4 hits from Ozzie Albies. You got a couple from Ozuna, a couple from Duvall. I don't think that Cole Irvin is really going to cut it in very shallow leagues. But I think, honestly, like, it doesn't hurt to hold on to him. 3.03 ERA, 1.23 whip, 51 strikeouts is not great, but we've known that he's not going to give you strikeouts. You weren't rostering him. You didn't add him for strikeouts. You got kind of lucky with 8 of them yesterday. You're going to get a below-average strikeout rate with probably a decent amount of opportunities for victories. He has 6 of them so far to go along with fairly solid ratio. So unless you're dropping him for something that's really, really nice, I'm not in a big hurry to cut him. Is he like a must-roster player? No, but he's not a must-cut type of player either. He's 51% on Yahoo, and that kind of makes sense. He's a 50-50 toss-up. But I don't think that he's somebody that you got to be like, oh, you know, get this guy off my team type of deal. Nowhere near that bad. Griffin Canning, really bad stuff from him. He allowed 7 hits, 4 runs. Or excuse me, no, not 7 hits. Seventh. It was the 7th loss of the season, excuse me. 4 runs on 4 hits with 1 walk over 6 innings. Just 3 strikeouts. Miserable, miserable season for Griffin Canning. You're not getting wins. You're not getting strikeouts. You're not getting ratios. 11% on Yahoo is a little bit generous as far as I see it. Don't even think he needs to be rostered in that many leagues. Reese Olson is a pretty popular drop. He struggled a couple days ago against, it was Washington, and now people are fully ready to cut bait after he's had 3 consecutive poor starts. We did talk about him this week already, but just want to reiterate that he's another guy where I don't think it's like a must-drop type of thing. The numbers regressed to where they probably should be. 3.68 ERA. It's not like it's awful. You know, he was running like a 1.89 ERA beforehand. That was never really going to stick. This is probably more the real version of Reese Olson, the season-long numbers. 3.68 ERA, 1.28 whip. I think it's totally fine to still be holding him. Similarly to Cole Irvin, it's not like a must-roster. It's not a must-cut, but he's fine enough where I wouldn't cut him unless there's something pretty nice that's just sitting out there on waivers for you. Let's move into the weekend streamers. Haven't done this in a while. You guys can keep track of these and see what my hit rate is. It was actually very good last season. I will say our weekend streamers did go very, very well in 2023. But let's start off with Mackenzie Gore. Kind of pushing it a little bit here with this one, but 66% rostered does tell me that he's probably still sitting out there in some leagues. Especially after that Mets start, people got very upset after he did not do well against the Mets. Cut him in a bunch of places, so you're seeing the percentage lower than it probably should be, even after that start against Atlanta last week where he really bounced back 7 innings. I believe it was 3-run ball against the Braves, or 2-run ball, excuse me, 2-run ball, 7 strikeouts against the Braves. People started to add him up a little bit more, but he's still only 66% rostered. He's giving you massive strikeouts. He's actually won 5 games, which is kind of surprising at this point of the season. He only won 7 all of last year, but he is a different pitcher, I think. The real reason why he's the number one guy I'm mentioning here is because of the matchup with the Marlins. That's a huge, huge thing. The Marlins are brutal. A lot of the time you are picking and choosing matchups here on the weekend, especially in head-to-head leagues. But especially when you got a guy like Mackenzie Gore going against a team like Miami, I think it's pretty easy to pick him up there if he's still available. There are a couple guys in Miami's lineup who can hit lefties kind of well, Brian De La Cruz, but I wouldn't let that stop you from picking up Gore. That lineup is pretty terrible overall here. Simeon Woods Richardson was the guy I skipped over before. He is the most popular ad of the day. Number one with nearly 12,000 ads at this point on Yahoo. He's jumped all the way up to 29%. The dude's been really excellent against Pittsburgh. He kind of struggled against Houston, but he was good against Kansas City, good against Washington, good against Cleveland. And now he gets a matchup against Oakland where he's only 29% rostered still. This is one of the best options. You could even argue that he's better than Gore, but it's those guys are probably 1 and 2. If anything, maybe Richardson is higher up because he's more available, but those two guys are kind of the top of the pile for me there. Mitchell Parker, another Washington starter who will face Miami this weekend. It was a bit of a poor outing against Detroit last time, even though he didn't allow any earned runs. A Mitchell Parker fielding error, he caused this himself, allowed 4 runs to score, but it didn't actually affect his ERA because of the errors. Sometimes I think that maybe if a pitcher commits an error, it should count towards the ERA because it is their fault. But in any event, you got the 0 ERA over 4.2 innings last time against Detroit. And you're getting Miami. You know, Mitchell Parker has been very, very good throughout the entire season. It's really just been one start that wasn't great for him, and it was the Detroit one last time. And even that one wasn't like the end of the world. It wasn't good by any means, don't get me wrong. But it wasn't like a Bailey Ober, tenured run type of deal or something like that. It was a subpar outing, but I think he can get back on the horse in a pretty easy matchup against Miami. I just don't think that they're a team that you need to really worry about. You can stream most guys against them, but especially somebody who has had a pretty good track record this season. Mitchell Parker has a 3.21 ERA and a 1.09 WHIP through his 61 2/3. Came right out of nowhere this season, but he has been really, really good. And I think he'd be the third guy that I am prioritizing this weekend. Either him or this next guy we're going to mention, Chris Paddock. Chris Paddock, I think, is in a really good spot here. And again, it's a lot of it does come down to the matchup. But I also believe, to some extent anyway, that Chris Paddock is better than what we've seen so far on the surface. He's not somebody I'd be aggressively pursuing in a lot of cases. But for a matchup against the Athletics, we'll stream pretty much anybody, especially somebody coming off of that great start that he had last time against Colorado, and somebody who is kind of underperforming the advanced metrics here. 4.79 on the ERA, he has a 3.75 xFIP, and he has a 3.74 Sierra. He's getting screwed by about a run on average for every nine innings he's pitching. And if you're looking at the strikeout minus walk rate at 17.2%, it's really good. The strikeouts are a little bit lower than I'd want, but the walks are also minuscule. He's not allowing a lot of free passes. I do think that we will see a successful outing for him against Oakland. It's pretty tough to go and pitch against Oakland and not have a successful outing. Of course, you know, we saw what they did to Chris Sale a few weeks ago. It does happen, but I think it's pretty safe to be rolling with Chris Paddock here. The last one that I'm going to mention is Spencer Arrighetti, and he's also facing Detroit. This one is the bottom of the list for a reason, but he has been a lot better as of late. Like, he started off pretty miserably. His first few starts were pretty bad. No two ways about it. You know, the KC one, the Atlanta, Chicago. He had a decent one against Cleveland and then bad against the Yankees again. Most of the starts this year have not been good for him. And that's why he has a 5.33 ERA and a 1.62 WHIP, which are horrendous. I also look at the 3.59 BABIP he's allowed, and I think, okay, you look at that. You also look at the fact that his barrel and hard hit rates are really, really low, and you think this is a guy who's probably getting screwed a little bit in terms of the performance as we've seen. He has a 383 xFIP, or excuse me, a 383 FIP, a 407 xFIP. Those are a run and a half lower about than his ERA. The strikeouts are really good. He does issue too many free passes, which can come back to bite you in any given outing. But we're starting to see some improvement overall from Arrighetti, and I think the raw stuff is really good to go along with a very favorable matchup. Houston versus Detroit should be able to squeeze out a win for you there. I think all these guys give you a good opportunity to get a win over the weekend if that's what you're looking for, with some mix-in help of strikeouts and ratios here as well. So I would prioritize the Mackenzie Gore at the top with Simeon Woods Richardson a close second. Chris Paddock and Mitchell Parker are pretty close for that second/third position there. I probably would slightly lean Parker because he has been a bit more consistent this year, but that one's pretty much a toss-up. And then Spencer Arrighetti bringing up the rear, but still, I think somebody who could be a pretty solid streamer for you guys over the course of the weekend. But that will do it for us, guys. 7 podcasts this week. Had lots of fun on the show. Thanks to Frank Stample and JP for coming on this week. We're going to bring Eric Cross, my good buddy from FTN Fantasy and Rotoballer, onto the show next week to talk about some prospects, talk about some rookies. We'll get back into Wyatt Langford, see what Eric thinks there. We'll talk Jackson Holliday. We'll talk James Wood, Dylan Cruz. Lots of guys we will get into. That will be next week on Tuesday. We'll be back on Monday with our usual talk of the weekend, talk of most added players, and whatever else we need to cover from the weekend slate. But guys, I hope you have a great weekend. Wish you all the best of luck in your head-to-head or roto leagues, any leagues you guys are playing in, DFS, anything you're doing. Wish you the best of luck, and we'll see you again on Monday, everybody. Until then, take care.
It's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! sports. And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. So start your free trial of SiriusXM today. Visit SiriusXM.com/believe.